From Greenville to Ephrata, Bloomsburg to Indiana, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, it is known as the Fairness in Women's Sports Act, and it is designed to protect the advances made for female athletes under Title IX. State Representative Barb Gleim is here with details. Allegheny County attempted to implement a mandatory sick leave law. It has failed for now. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi are here with an Allegheny Institute report. And a certain amount of government regulation is needed to provide structure. But regulations and regulators often go too far. Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, has a Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to State Representative Barb Gleim in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. With open seats for both governor and U.S. senator on the ballot next year, candidates are lining up and scoring endorsements. Jeff Bartos, who was the GOP's nominee for lieutenant governor in 2018 and who is now running for the Senate, won the endorsement of State Treasurer Stacey Garrity. Garrity won her office in an upset election last year and is considered to be a rising star within the party. Meanwhile, former Congressman Lou Barletta, who lost the U.S. Senate race to Bob Casey in 2016, edged closer to getting into the 2022 race for governor. He has formed a new political action committee, Change PAC, to begin raising money and laying the groundwork for a potential campaign. Pennsylvania State House Republicans conducted a survey of businesses in the state to help them draft legislation to improve the Commonwealth's business climate. House Majority Leader Kerry Benninghoff said the loud message coming from the poll results was, "Get out of the way." Policy Chairman Martin Clauser said the survey results made it clear that government restrictions and mandates continue to hamper the state's economic recovery. The hospitality industry in particular continues to suffer from regulations placed on it by Governor Tom Wolf in a supposed effort to slow the spread of COVID-19. According to the Center Square, Pennsylvania will have the second highest combined state and federal corporate tax rate in the nation should President Joe Biden's so-called infrastructure plan be approved. The combined federal-state corporate tax rate in Pennsylvania would jump to 32%. Only New Jersey would have a higher combined rate. 44 states and Washington, D.C. impose a corporate tax in addition to the federal corporate tax rate, which currently is set at 21%. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. A group of women lawmakers have proposed the Fairness in Women's Sports Act, which is designed to only allow biological females to participate in women's sports. Here to talk about why the legislation is necessary and what it would do to protect female athletes is State Representative Barb Gleim. She represents the 199th Legislative District, which is in Cumberland County. Barb, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Barb, before we get into specifics of the legislation that you and a number of other representatives have proposed, tell us a bit about the situation that exists currently when it comes to biological males who are now participating in a number of venues in women's sports.
Our legislation was a reaction to President Biden's executive order, which we feel violates Title IX. And the new order required that biological males be permitted to compete on women's sports teams. And this is a problem because we feel that it's not fair. So we are asking this administration, through our legislation, to affirm Title IX's longstanding commitment to providing biological females with equal experiences and opportunities in competitive sport, and protect their safety in the meantime. We know that males, biological males, on average, are stronger. They have larger lungs. They have larger hearts. They are just stronger than women in general. And so we need that in competitive sport to be equal so that women can can compete on an equal playing field. And so this request through this legislation of this administration is limited to competitive interscholastic, intercollegiate, and athletic programs that are elite in nature. A lot of the people that you know of and that I know of who have young women, they have what are called feeder programs or club programs, so that would include this as well. And it would not affect things like intramurals or recreational sports that are sponsored through municipalities, schools, and colleges. We are asking that through this legislation that the state recognize that science and not ideology dictates the need for sex segregation in sports, and that women, therefore, are not being, again, discriminated against in sport.
Interesting that you would bring up the term science, Barb, because we're always lectured by the left. Well, we need to follow the science. As you pointed out, and elaborate a little bit more, the science here really backs up your position. And I appreciate the fact that you reported that men are big-hearted. I think you probably don't mean that in an emotional way, but in a physical way, but it's good to hear. Really, the science here is such that given the natural physical attributes of males, this actually does put women, biological women, at some risk of physical harm in some of these sports, does it not?
Yes, I believe it does, and so do the majority of people when we're discussing this topic. So the issue for many people is not whether these trans women or girls should be included in women's sport. Rather, it's the that female athletes continue to be protected within their own sport, so that females are competing within their own female category, and that the physical safety of those females is protected. We know that even through Title IX, Congress understood that height and size and weight are not equal when it comes to biological males and biological females. They're incrementally stronger, and that's basically what Title IX was presented to protect. And recently as just this year, there is a UK study that came out that proved that biological males are superior to biological females and would advance in sport, competitive sports, at an unequal rate.
Tell us a little bit more about Title IX. You've referenced it a couple times. A lot of people maybe have heard of it but aren't really sure. It's been around for a long time. What was it meant to do, and has it succeeded in its intent?
Title IX, and I wrote about this in my op-ed, it ensures that no person shall, on the basis of sex, be excluded from participation in or denied the benefits of an equal education program or activity. It's designed to provide equal access and quality, as well as scholarship opportunities. And before Title IX, very few opportunities existed for female athletes. The NCAA, which was created in 1906, formatted and enforced rules for men's football, but somehow evolved to become the ruling body of collegiate athletics. But even then, they offered no athletic scholarships for women or held no championships for women's teams. So Title IX was designed to correct the imbalances that the NCAA created, and it was designed to enforce equal access and quality, so that women's and men's programs could be separate and that women could compete on a level playing field. Now, just as, I guess, soon as yesterday, the NCAA came out with a statement saying that they are going to make sure that transgender women have the ability to compete in women's sports and make sure that they are not being discriminated against. But yet again, there is no statement that's specific on what kind of initiation or investigation is required, and there's no way to monitor compliance of these rules that they are creating. So again, we're going to have to go back and make sure that competitive sports for biological females are being protected.
We are talking with State Representative Barb Gleim, and we're talking about the proposed Fairness in Women's Sports Act. And Barb, the NCAA, like a lot of other institutional organizations, tends to try to be woke and virtue signal on this. Governor Wolf, of course, said this was discriminatory, which it's exactly the opposite of. Have you found, in terms of reaction to this proposed law, that you get more name-calling and virtue signaling as opposed to an actual discussion of science and policy matters?
Absolutely. I mean, you've seen the social media out there, and they call you transphobe, and they call you a bigot. They call you all sorts of names. And where civil discourse has just left us. So I refuse to be silenced on this topic. Women, biological women, have a voice, and there needs to be civil discourse on it because it is an issue. And oppressing one population at the expense of another in the name of progress is still oppression, and it's discriminatory. And so we need to have a solution to this, to the equality factor of this. And right now, I do want to tell the listeners that the Department of Education has concluded that the current policies regarding transgender athletes violates Title IX. So they are taking a look at this, but there to date, there's no solution that includes trans girls and women while preserving the competitive opportunities for females. It's a real problem. Right now, states are just passing conflicting laws right and left out there. If you go, and I do want to tell you and the listeners also that Pennsylvania is only one of five states right now that has no policy one way or the other regarding gender identity in sport. So there are 10 states that have expressly required males and females to participate in high school sports according to their birth sex. There are 17 states and the District of Columbia that are requiring the inclusion of trans girls and girls into girls sports without regard to the extent of which they may retain male-linked physical traits and otherwise justify what their policy is. And then there's another 17 states out there that have adopted the policy similar to the NCAA rules. So the NCAA rules right now allow trans girls and women to compete after taking gender-affirming hormones for a year. But again, now we have certain studies that are coming out that are saying that even after a year, trans women retain athletic edges.
We have been talking again with State Representative Barb Gleim. She represents the 199th State Legislative District, that in Cumberland County, Pennsylvania, right outside Harrisburg here. And she is sponsor of the Fairness in Women's Sports Act. Barb, if we have listeners who would like to learn more about the act, learn more about you, read about current legislation, where can they go on the website to get that information?
Well, they can go on my website, which is www.repgleim.com.
State Representative Barb Gleim. Barb, thank you for taking time to be with us.
Thank you for having me.
Allegheny County Executive Rich Fitzgerald has vetoed a proposed mandatory sick leave law. The reason might surprise you. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi have details on this Allegheny Institute report.
Hello and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm your host, Frank Gamrat, and with me today is Allegheny Institute Research Director Eric Montardi. Eric, how are you doing today?
Doing fine, Frank. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's springtime here in the Bird and across the Commonwealth. The birds are singing, and Allegheny County Council is up to its same old tricks. You recently just published a policy brief on Allegheny County's sick leave ordinance. Could you please give us a little bit of information as to what was in that bill?
Absolutely. Paid sick leave is a proposal whereby some government will mandate to employers that they have to offer a certain number of paid sick days based on the number of hours worked by an employee within the government jurisdiction. What Allegheny County was proposing was that within the boundaries of Allegheny County, any employer or that employed 26 or more people, if they did not offer paid sick leave, had to offer 1 hour of paid sick leave for every 35 hours worked, and the maximum up to 40 hours within a calendar year. This was following on the heels of the city of Pittsburgh, which had enacted an ordinance in 2015 and went through a very long court battle for 4 years, and then it was ruled that it could stand in 2019. So originally, as it was proposed, the county ordinance, it was not really clear what role it would have had in the city of Pittsburgh, because, of course, the city of Pittsburgh is in Allegheny County. It's one of the municipalities within the county. It wasn't really clear if this ordinance would have gone forward, if this would have superseded what was in the city of Pittsburgh ordinance and their regulations now that that law stands, or if this would have just applied in the municipalities outside.
Right. And of course, the Allegheny County Chief Executive vetoed it, but not for the reasons you might think. What was his reasoning for the veto?
His reasoning was there was language in the state laws that concern counties, one called the Local Health Administration Law that applies to all classes of counties. Basically reads that where you have a Board of Health or a Department of Health, they draft regulations, and then that goes to the Board of County Commissioners for approval or rejection. Now, Allegheny County is a home rule county, so we have a little bit of a different government. We don't have a Board of Commissioners anymore. We have, as you mentioned, a county executive and a county council. That was basically his reasoning. And his veto message, which came mid-March after the ordinance was passed, he said that he was not opposed to paid sick leave. He just didn't like the process. So that was vetoed. There was a motion drafted by the council to override, and that was done at the end of March, but that motion failed.
Now, of course, this is all wrapped up in the do-gooding. We're interested in public health, especially in the wake of the pandemic. Thought is that workers are going to be afraid that if they don't go to work, they'll get fired. So they go to work sick and it spreads the disease. Some of the research that's out there does not really back up that claim that having a sick leave ordinance will, in fact, reduce outbreaks of diseases or cause harm into the community. So I know that you looked at other cities and counties. What other cities and counties have these types of sick leaves?
San Francisco was the first city that passed an ordinance in 2008. In Pennsylvania, besides Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, they've had one since 2015. There are cities in Texas. You have Dallas, Houston, San Antonio. They were the most recent ones. Minneapolis, Duluth, Chicago, Cook County. So there you have a similar situation where you have a city, Chicago, and then the county that surrounds it, Cook County, like you would have in Pittsburgh and Allegheny County. Mm-hmm. And looking at these ordinances, I mean, there's a wide variety of who the ordinance would apply to, the number of hours that you have to work in order to earn an hour of paid sick leave, how much you can accumulate in a year, whether it rolls over from 1 year to the next. That also kind of rolls out some of the cities and the counties, because there's a few states that have statewide paid sick leave, so that would apply to all the local governments within there. So these ones here, when we're talking, you know, Pittsburgh, Allegheny County, and then this other group, these are basically cities where there is no statewide law that would mandate paid sick leave.
Right. In an era when businesses are kind of getting racked with loss of customers, loss of business, you know, you've got downtowns are largely empty right now. Is a sick leave something that needs to be done now? I mean, it seems to me like it's just going to be a burden on businesses who now have to keep track of how many hours their employees work. And of course, like you said, businesses with 26 employees or more. So what is to keep a business from hiring 25 or 24? And then, of course, these are just compliance issues on the end of the business's side. What about the compliance costs for the government? What are they going to do?
Just looking at what Allegheny County has, and it's, you know, very similar to what the city of Pittsburgh has. Like you mentioned, there's the record keeping. The business has to keep records for a period of 2 years and would be subject to examination of those records by some unnamed agency. I mean, it's basically left to the county executive, you know, what agency would be designated to investigate. Then, of course, there's a complaint procedure, right? Someone says, well, you're entitled to sick leave. I tried to use it. My employer said I couldn't. Or the employer says somebody took a day off. They said they were doing it for, you know, going for some purpose of sick leave, and they didn't. So now we have to go to said agency in order to go through a process of mediation and basically resolving the issue. So one of the interesting aspects here I was able to do was look at these other cities to see What number of complaints have they had since right. these ordinances have been up and running? And it varies. Again, you know, bigger cities may have more. In a lot of the cases where you have the number of complaints, it's not really clear, like, mm-hmm. is it the same person or right. same people filing complaints right. that go unresolved? You know, Philadelphia was able to give some numbers where they have the number of cases and then the numbers of cases that were resolved under sick leave complaints. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these places have departments where they're usually handling other labor law issues, minimum wage, mm-hmm. prevailing wage, permitting. The sick leave enforcement is sort of inside mm-hmm. of that department, and they could be sharing staff. They could be doing it sort of on their own. So it does vary. You know, you have places mm-hmm. where, like, San Francisco might be $6 million or so a year mm-hmm. to enforce the law. Pittsburgh, which is just getting up and running, they have an office, but it's not a sick leave office. Right. They're just part of it. They've got 14 full-timers. It's not clear how many of those people would be responsible for sick leave. But there, again, you're talking about $1 million budget. Right. So taking that countywide, you would think, again, it would be bigger. But it was never really clear in the right. ordinance whether Pittsburgh was going to be left alone mm-hmm. or if they were going to be part of the county enforcement. And part of the complication came, it was originally proposed in the county ordinance. They had the same employee threshold mm-hmm. cutoff where it was 15 or more or less than 15 employees. Then as it went through the mm-hmm. amendment process, that's where it went up to 26. And it was okay. really unclear, like, okay, well, if I'm in the city of Pittsburgh, but I'm part of mm-hmm. Allegheny County, mm-hmm. if I have 20 employees, what does that mean? Right. And that gets back to the bigger point as well of, like, government's just kind of picking a number, right? They're saying, we're going to say that it's 26 or more. If you have 24 employees, we mm-hmm. believe you can't afford the sick leave, mm-hmm. but the one with 27 right. can. I mean, that's a really right. big guess on their part, right. a really big assumption.
And let's face it, this will fall more on the shoulders of small businesses than it will on big corporations that typically have their own sick leave policies anyway. So this is going after the group that I said before could least afford to have yet another regulation piled on top of them as they try to recover from the pandemic. I'd like to thank my colleague Eric for joining me today. I'd like to thank our listeners for tuning in. If you'd like more information on this or other topics, I invite you to visit our website at AlleghenyInstitute.org where you can sign up for a free policy brief and get all this great stuff in your mailbox. Thank you for listening to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
Government regulations have a big impact on every sector of our economy. Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania takes a closer look on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
After taking office in early 2017, President Trump issued Executive Order 13771, making headlines with its two-for-one requirement, mandating two regulations must be identified for elimination each time a new one is put forward. Additionally, this executive order created a regulatory budget, calling for caps on new regulatory costs imposed by executive branch agencies. In other words, capping appropriations proposed and spent by unelected Washington bureaucrats without any input from Congress. But in a recent Forbes article, Clyde Wayne Cruz Jr. of the Competitive Enterprise Institute noted, "We'll be kissing those directives goodbye in a new administration." While there may not be a consortium of champions for workers and small business in Washington, we can ensure a better treatment for Pennsylvania workers and businesses right here in our Commonwealth with swift action from the General Assembly. With shutdowns in the Commonwealth dragging into their 13th consecutive month, Harrisburg owes Pennsylvania businesses and workers relief. Passing and enacting regulatory reform should be an immediate action in the first quarter of the 2021-2022 legislative session. The General Assembly should prioritize consideration of reforms that make it easier for our businesses to recover, stronger than before. And through regulatory reform, we can foster a climate that encourages new businesses to open and existing businesses to fully reopen, reimagining their services and products, free from the burdensome instructions or standards inherent to our overwhelming regulatory status quo. High costs for compliance translates to negative impacts on economic growth. And at a time when many entrepreneurs and businesses don't have the excess capital to spend on dealing with regulation, the threat of closing permanently remains high for too many PA businesses, from Punxsutawney to Philadelphia. By eliminating unnecessary hurdles and lowering compliance costs, businesses rural and urban of all shapes and sizes will be free to concentrate on creating value for customers and society instead of navigating complex, regulatory, outdated webs. We can get our economy going again and help our Commonwealth recover stronger by passing legislation to improve our regulatory culture. And luckily, Harrisburg is already answering the call. Last week, a series of regulatory reform bills passed through the House State Government Committee and the House Environmental Resources and Energy Committee. And this week, Senator Mastriano, chairman of the Intergovernmental Operations Committee, plans to run many of the Senate companions. Some of the key pieces of legislation which will shortly be before the full chamber in both the House and Senate are the Pennsylvania version of the proposed Federal RAINS Act, which stands for Regulations from the Executive in Need of Scrutiny. It requires the General Assembly to approve regulations that have an impact of more than $1 million annually. Permit transparency legislation, which reforms the administration of permits in the state by requiring that certain creation of an online tracking system for permit applications to provide updates in the status of permits and requires more information to be provided on permits and annual reports. Third, regulatory compliance advisor enabling legislation, which would require state agencies to appoint an advisor charged to work with regulators and businesses to issue advisory opinions on how to comply with regulations, helping businesses before they're ever assessed costly fees, fines, and penalties. Fourth, independent office of the repealer enabling legislation, which would create new opportunities to review existing regulations and implements that two out, one in standard for new rules. You know, with a diverse workforce and abundant natural resource supply, PA can be a place where businesses come to grow, to thrive, and to be part of our communities. But the massive and overly burdensome regulatory state is a large impediment to attaining that goal. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director with Americans for Prosperity. Find us on Facebook by searching at PAAFP and on Twitter by searching at AFP Pennsylvania.
And the 2021 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is rapidly approaching. After being virtual last year, an in-person conference will be held June 11 and 12 at the Radisson Penn Harris Convention Center in Camp Hill. The Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is the premier gathering of conservative activists each year here in the Keystone State. This year's featured speakers will be Jesse Waters, host of Waters World on the Fox News Channel, Fox News contributor Jason Chaffetz, along with John Gizzi of Newsmax. Complete information and registration for the 2021 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference can be found at paleadershipconference.org. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. We'll be right back.